Many people will be watching the Fox Broadcast Network tonight because the country's most popular television show, American Idol, begins its 9th season. It will also be the last season for Simon Cowell to sling cutting comments at aspiring singers.
Eric, if you could imagine Linda Blair in The Exorcist singing at the point when she's doing all that on the bed. That's, no, seriously, that's what she'd sound like, because there were six of you in there.
Cowell's observations are often the most incisive criticism the American Idol contestants get, and he announced yesterday that he's going to start up his own talent show next year. Fans of Idol might be relieved to hear that host Ryan Seacrest is under contract for another 3 years. It is hard to miss Mr. Seacrest on celebrity TV. He also hosts coverage of the Grammys, the Emmys, the Oscars, and the Golden Globes. Now, it's easy to dismiss Ryan Seacrest as a pop culture Ken doll, but as NPR's Netta Ulaby explains, he has real power.
So far, Ryan Seacrest has not taken over the entire world, only its shiniest, most glittery broadcasts.
Hello and welcome to the biggest, most spectacular New Year's Eve party in the entire world.
The show, still known as Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve, is now mainly hosted and produced by Ryan Seacrest. His sweetly vanilla good looks mask a monster of a work ethic. Every weekday, he wakes at 4 a.m. to host a morning radio show in Los Angeles. Then he hosts a TV program for the E! Channel. Then he edits and hosts a national radio show.
Back to the music and On Air with Ryan Seacrest.
On weekends, he relaxes by hosting one of the longest-running pop radio shows, heard on over 500 stations.
American Top 40 right here. I'll be with you.
In the course of a very short period of time, he's essentially replaced Dick Clark in his longstanding MC duties on so many shows.
Larry Rosen is a media analyst and co-founder of Edison Research.
He's replaced Casey Kasem. He's replaced Rick Dees, who was the number one morning man in Los Angeles.
And then there's rumors, says Rosen, that Seacrest will eventually take over Larry King's show as well.
Tipping them over one by one, replacing every one of these sort of old media hosts. You'd think a different new guy or gal would come into each one of these positions, but in every case, it's Ryan Seacrest.
Ryan Seacrest has consolidated so many media roles, it's almost like a reflection of an era where media companies have gobbled each other up and where glossy entertainment seems to trump hard news. There's a joke that Seacrest taught a nation of grandmothers how to text message through American Idol. His rise to power comes partly because he insists on producing the shows he hosts and the ones he creates and develops. Ryan Seacrest pushed his reality show, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
But yes, so I'm producing that, and I'm producing the Denise Richards show, which launches Memorial Day for E! As well.
What do you need these headaches for?
Apparently, Seacrest thrives on headaches. He built Keeping Up with the Kardashians into the channel's number one hit. Seacrest is known for working unbelievably hard with an obsessively micromanaged schedule.
40. Everything is like, I mean, literally everything's like to the minute, but I love it. I love it. Like,
you have like a daily schedule, so
I
you
have
know
a grid.
Exactly what it's a grid, really.
I get a grid that's faxed to my house from my office the night before.
Really?
So it tells me what time I have to get ready for you.
Uh-huh.
So I had to shower, and it's like three people are CC'd, so three people know when I'm in the shower. Three people know when I'm traveling to Jimmy Kimmel. They know
really?
What I'm doing. Yeah,
wow.
At all times.
You didn't have to shower for me, you could have came over.
I did.
Seacrest's contract with American Idol is worth $45 million over the course of 3 years. Comcast and E! Pay him another $21 million for the same amount of time. He has an uncanny knack for managing his own brand, says Tom Weeks. He's an executive at Starcom Entertainment.
He gets that people think he's the squeaky clean guy, and there's a part of brands that you want to be approachable, but you don't want to be so perfect that people just start ignoring you because it's not real anymore.
Still, it's the glossy perfection of Seacrest's persona that moved author Dave Housley to write a short story about him. It's in a collection called Ryan Seacrest is Famous. Housley finds his media mastery almost a little ominous. Ryan Seacrest seems so spookily prepackaged, he says he almost doesn't seem human, but
some kind of media conglomerate robot that's going to continue assembling jobs until he's kind of controlling everything. He's going to be the President of the United States.
President Ryan Seacrest. You heard it here first. Netta Ulaby, NPR News.
You hear Netta's forecasts on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Finally, we have some sad music news to report. Teddy Pendergrass, whose seductive voice led the group Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, died Wednesday. He was 59. A Philadelphia native, Pendergrass began his musical career as a drummer and was hired as a replacement by Harold Melvin. He later became the lead singer of Melvin's group. The band was signed by producers Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff and had big hits with Wake Up Everybody and If You Don't Know Me By Now. In a 2007 interview with NPR's News and Notes, Pendergrass told Farai Chidea how he moved from drummer to lead singer.
I was asked to come up front and sing as one of the singers because at the time, we all knew that each one who could sing, who could not sing, because a group of nine people traveling in a station wagon around the country kind of knew who could do what. So when he asked, I thought, okay, that would be interesting, so I left the drums and went to the front as one of the singers. Then in 1971, we got a record deal with Gamble and Huff. The group changed the name to Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, and voila, I was one of the singers with the group.
Wake up everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back for thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
As a solo artist, Pendergrass went on to a string of hit love ballads, attracting huge female audiences with his ladies-only concerts and becoming a sex symbol of the R&B genre with songs such as Close the Door, Turn Off the Lights, and Love TKO.
Take a fool and lose twice, start all over again. Think I better let it go. Looks like another Love TKO.
Pendergrass's career almost came to an end in 1982 when his Rolls Royce crashed into a tree and he was paralyzed from a spinal cord injury. But he refused to accept that he could no longer perform. He continued to do live shows from his wheelchair, but his career was never the same. He performed less and less often and founded the Teddy Pendergrass Alliance to help others with spinal cord injuries. But he never forgot his fans and loved every minute of his singing career.
I just try to be who I am, and whatever comes off that stage is real. It's not put on, and it's not developed by somebody who just thought, hey, this is what you need. It's not an image. This is the person that I am, that I've been all my life. So I don't really pay a lot of attention to it. I just go to work. It's been a wonderful ride.
Teddy Pendergrass died Wednesday at the age of 59 following a difficult recovery from surgery for colon cancer. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.
All the things that we've been through, you should understand.
Now, the story of one man who traveled to a small island in the South Pacific just to make a point about America. Mike Daisy is a solo theater performer whose work has been called electrifying and brilliant. As NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports, his latest piece is about cargo cults.
Cargo cults in the South Pacific began after World War II. During the war, thousands of Allied forces set up military bases on remote islands. They brought with them modern amenities like radios, jeeps, refrigerators. And then they left, taking their goods with them.
And in that moment, when they were on these islands, the want of the islanders crystallized.
In his new show, The Last Cargo Cult, Mike Daisy talks about how, for tribal societies, this was like magic.
And so when they left, all of the South Pacific, independent of each other, religions sprang up that worshipped America, or more accurately, worshipped the power of America, worshipped the objects of America.
To this day, the people of the island Tana try to summon back the Americans and their objects in an annual celebration called John Frum Day. And last year, around the time the global markets were crashing, Mike Daisy read an article about this cargo cult and decided to go there because it seemed like a place that was beyond the reach of money.
And it was at that moment that I realized that I needed to go to this island, but I had to do it because of what was happening in my culture.
Now, as a performer, Mike Daisy is quite large, physically and emotionally. Getting to this remote little island in the South Pacific was not easy for him.
And this plane is a joke. It looks like the punchline to a joke about planes. You look at it and you think, really?
But he got there and was able to attend the John Frum Day celebration. Daisy says thousands of people attend.
It's actually very breathtaking. There's this beautiful silence, and they raise a huge American flag up a flagpole, and then they begin to tell the story of the history of America as they know it to be, woven together with their own history, in these massive dances that have hundreds of people. They put Broadway to shame.
Some history, social commentary, comedy, and autobiography. That's what you get in a Mike Daisy monologue. Jason Zinnemann, a theater critic for the New York Times, calls him a master storyteller. Zinnemann says Daisy might not like this, but he sees similarities between him and Fox News commentator Glenn Beck.
And I say that with generosity because I think Glenn Beck is a great performer. One of the things Glenn Beck does is he tells several different narratives, and then they intersect in these unusual ways, and he makes these connections between seemingly disparate things, and that's what Mike Daisy does.
I remember the moment I realized I was poor.
Daisy's monologues almost always refer back to his growing up in a working-class community in far northern Maine.
And as my father is fond of saying, Maine is like Mexico with white people. And that's why it's called vacation land, because every summer, all the landed gentry of New England flood up to Maine. And they say, oh my God, it's all so quaint and so cheap. And the people are so cheap. And they're the same color as we are. So it isn't awkward.
In his current show, Mike Daisy connects what he calls Americans' worship of money to a cargo cult. As an artist, Daisy says he doesn't make a lot of money, but he does think about it every day. In his show, he says the balance in his bank account is the single most important number in his life.
All money is power. All power corrupts. But we can't go through life. Most of us can't. I know I can't go through life totally divorced from money. I need money. In fact, I love money. At the same time, I have to recognize that the more money I have, the more it corrupts.
Something Mike Daisy says the people he met on a remote island in the South Pacific are aware of, even as they, like us, worship what it might bring. Over the next few months, Mike Daisy is performing The Last Cargo Cult at theaters in Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and Chicago. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
When public figures have public troubles, late-night comedians are more than happy to turn them into punchlines. Well, apparently the same rule applies when it's the comedians themselves who are embroiled in controversy. Exhibit A, the ongoing flap at NBC.
There, executives want to move Jay Leno back into his old Tonight Show slot after a failed bid in prime time, but that requires bumping the actual Tonight Show and its host Conan O'Brien by half an hour. Both hosts are unhappy, and they've used their respective shows to vent, to poke fun at each other, and to skewer NBC.
Well, some good news from Afghanistan. You hear about this? Critics of the war have stopped referring to it as another Vietnam. They're not calling it anymore. The bad news, they're now calling it another NBC. Yeah, that's what it's called.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, hello there. I'm Conan O'Brien, and I've been practicing the phrase, who ordered the Mochaccino Grande? That's my... look for me. And please tip, okay?
The Jay Leno Show. As you know, we're not just a show anymore. We are now a collector's item.
A collector's item.
Big local story. This weekend, no one was seriously hurt, but this is true. A 6.5 earthquake hit California. Did you know that? True story, yeah. The earthquake was so powerful, it knocked Jay Leno Show from 10 o'clock to 11:35.
The NBC said they wanted drama at 10. Now they got it.
Everybody now wants to know what my plans are. Everyone's asking me. All I can say is I plan to continue putting on a great show night after night while stealing as many office supplies as humanly possible.
The material here is so rich that the rest of the late night bunch, even those not embroiled in a dispute with NBC, have not been able to resist getting in on the comedy. David Letterman on CBS, for one.
Here's my goal, my dream for American television. I just want everybody who wants a show to have a show.
Ah.
That's all.
You are, yeah.
Conan's going to 12:05 to do The Tonight Show, which, as somebody pointed out, really, at 12:05 is no longer The Tonight Show.
No.
It's tomorrow's show.
It's the tomorrow, really.
It's the next day's show.
And finally, on ABC, host Jimmy Kimmel came out with a remarkable disguise this week, a white-haired wig and a jutting prosthetic chin.
Hello, my name is Jay Leno, and let it hereby be known that I'm taking over all the shows in late night.
The jokes will no doubt continue until NBC manages to resolve what is, for them, no laughing matter.